We got the goals within our sights. Got the sweet dreams to brighten dark nights. From this moment.
Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with married jazz duo of guitarist Al Shulman and vocalist Stacey Shulman. We dug into their new album, Crazy World, done with the stellar cast of musicians like drummer Jeff Tane Watts, bassist Corcoran Hold, vocalist and multi-instrumentalist Dante Pope, and pianist and arranger Gil Goldstein. And we also get into their history and the music together. This project was conceived during a period of cultural and technological fragmentation and reflects a moment when the ground beneath daily life feels perpetually unstable. Rather than offering answers, Crazy World inhabits the uncertainty of the present moment, questioning what is real, what is manufactured, and what still holds when familiar systems fall apart. We also dig into how they met and so much more. Enjoy this interview. It's so good to meet you. Thank you so much for taking a minute out. And I can't imagine a more appropriate term, crazy world, for the reality that we're in right now. So,
is it reality?
Oh, man. I think we're in the third or fourth Matrix movie is what I think we're in.
Yeah. You know,
but music is going to, hopefully art is going to save, I think it will save our souls. So let's get into it. Again, thank you for taking a minute out today. It's great to meet you.
Happy to be here, and thank you for having us on.
Yeah, you bet. So let's begin our journey with this. Before we get into the album and your lives and the music, 6 years ago, this pandemic was changing everything, doing so much, especially to musicians. How did you get through that era, and how has it influenced the way that you create and do things today?
It's a great question. We had already started experimenting with doing sort of in-house concerts or doing, live streaming from our home. We live in a historic home, and we've been gigging in the city a lot. And, you know, it's expensive to gig in the city. It's expensive to get in and get out. It was just a lot of hassle. And so we had started experimenting with streaming, and then the pandemic hit. So that was kind of a happy accident for us, because we had all the gear and the equipment and we were ready, you know, and able to do that. So we got through it a lot by just making music and streaming music to people. We found, I think like everyone else did, very strong community during the pandemic, because all of us were shut up in our houses, right? But we also depended on neighbors, and we reached out to friends because we needed to. So we have a fairly large backyard. We would do these outdoor jazz concerts in our backyard and invite all of our neighbors, and they would come and they'd bring their own lawn chairs and they'd sit, you know,
wear masks,
distance from each other.
And we called it a sunset swing series.
Yeah, right? we called it a sunset swing series.
Right.
And we just, you know, and it was so great, because even though people couldn't hug each other and be close to each other, we had some community around it.
Yeah. It did also, to your question though, it did sort of change. How do you innovate in a closed space? And when you can't communicate with other, you know, rhythm section, you know, how do you lock and sync all that stuff up? And I think some great innovation came out of that period. Jacob Collier being one of those people who sat in his room and created
stacks and layers
of harmonies, and showed the world what he could do in one room with I Got Rhythm, right? I think that was a period of, like with anything else, you find a way to make it work.
Yeah. You know, and even Emmett Cohen too. But I always felt like during that time, I ramped up a lot of interviews with musicians over that time. And I felt like in the pantheon of artists in the world, whether it's musicians or visual artists, I believe that jazz musicians were probably better equipped at this time to figure it out in improv, because that's what you do every night when you get on stage. It's kind of a natural extension of how you operate as artists.
Yeah, you just iterate, you know, it's like, okay, can't do this, do that.
Uh-huh.
And you have your audience, and people were connecting, you know, through social media, et cetera. So it wasn't really hard to connect with people. I think it was just learning a different way of communicating with other musicians and, you know, getting over the lag, or, you know, the being, you know, in real space with each other. But I think a lot of creativity came out of that.
Yeah, for sure.
We're also sort of conditioned as jazz musicians in the sort of in the canon of jazz. There's a million tunes in the songbook, right? Whether it's the Real Book or the Great American Songbook or whatever it is, we're always shedding, right? By ourselves. We're always trying to get, we've got our own practice regimens that we're used to doing, because you never know what tune's going to get called on the bandstand, particularly in New York, right? Uh-huh. So you never know what you have to be prepared and in what key a singer's gonna want to deliver it. So you have to be on your game, particularly in a market where all the players are as good as they are here. So that sort of, to your point, Joe, that we're sort of, you know, sort of self-made to be ready at any time, right?
Also the discipline of practice, right? When you're a musician, you have the discipline of not a couple minutes, but a couple hours of practicing and being in your zone and being alone with yourself or your instrument. And, you know, I think a lot of people who aren't musicians aren't used to that, you know, that kind of, you know, intense amount of time being alone with yourself and your thoughts and what you're doing, I think is unique to musicians.
Yeah,
it is.
For sure. So Crazy World has a wonderful lineup of musicians. It just sounds like a stellar project. So talk to me a little bit about how all of this came together and just how it feels to be able to put this out into the world.
Let's start with the tunes. You know, generally the way we work, Joe, is, you know, we're partners, you know, we're married. So Stacey will bring me a tune and she'll say, I've always loved this tune. We should do this tune. Yeah. Or I'll bring her a tune and say, you know, here's a tune we should try. And what do you think? The first test is between the two of us is like, do we universally like the tune? Yeah. If we universally like it, we then decide sort of, is it a duo thing? Is it a us plus a bass player thing? Is it more of an ensemble type thing? How do we want to treat it?
Yeah. So, and I would say, even, you know, going back to the pandemic conversation, some of the material that's on this album was tested, and because we were selecting material based on how we felt and kind of stress testing it with you know, the folks in our backyard.
Yeah. And the people on our stream. So that was sort of the first thing we did, was we came up with a body of songs that we wanted to record. It had been, you know, 3-4 years since our last record. Our last record did really well. And we were now at the point where we were starting to sort of branch out and say, what is as is? Because we're more than just like a, you know, Stacey and Alan, you know, husband and wife, you know, jazz duo.
Steve and Edie Gourmet.
Yeah, we're not into like the, because of where we live, we're like, we don't do the borscht belt. We're not the brunch act, right?
No caftans.
Yeah, so we took a more serious approach and we said, you know, A Crazy World, let's start with the title track. That is a tune that I've been a guitarist for, you know, 40 plus years, never knew the tune. She said, here's a lesser known Mancini tune that's part of from a show called Victor Victoria, which is, that wasn't a big Broadway show, right? Yeah. But it was buried in that show. And I was like, oh my God, Julie Andrews sang this. Uh-huh. That's intimidating. Stace, are you sure you want to take on a Julie Andrews tune?
I loved it. Ever since I saw her sing that in the movie Years, when it first came out in the 80s, I've always loved that tune.
Yeah.
So certainly apropos, you know, because I think there's material and then there's the journey that you take people on in, you know, queuing up that material and deciding how to arrange it. I think in the forefront of our mind was, we started with From This Moment On, which was later retitled From This Very Moment On, largely because of the negotiations we had with the publishers and the Cole Porter people, because we changed the lyrics. And I have always wanted to do that track, that tune, but I wanted to re-lyric it. I wanted to put it in the present day and make a statement about what we were navigating, and make it sort of a call to action for people to take their future into their own hands. So we re-lyriced it. We negotiated that with the Cole Porter publishers, and it was really important to me that we really make it a very different arrangement. And specifically, I wanted to smash it up, do something different with it, because the world is crazy, and we needed to feel all that tension. So we played with different formats. We played with big band as a potential idea. We played with different tempos that were going to work, but ultimately we were thinking more about the Black Eyed Peas and the Mashkinata mashup when we were putting that, you know, the final sort of touches onto that. And we ended up with this incredible, you know, composition that included Christelle's Bacon doing beatbox, and then Kokai coming in and doing the hip hop. And part of the reason why we really wanted to have Tane on the record, speaking of personnel, is because he does have this crazy, frenetic, bombastic, however you want to term it.
Choose your adjective.
Yeah. But it's high energy. Yeah. And that was really compelling for us. So that's part of where those choices came.
Yeah, and yeah. You know, back to the artist choice, back to the Crazy World track. Once we agreed that we wanted to do it, as we were playing through it, I said, you know what would sound really great on this track is, instead of another guitar solo, which is what I'm used to doing, why don't we have, like we had worked with Gregoire Marais on our last record, the harmonica player, famous harmonica player, and he did such a beautiful job, and we were like, what about accordion? Mm-hmm. And then we ran into Gil Goldstein at a club in New York.
Yeah.
One night, and he was, so we were kind enough, Matt, a bass player we know, Matt Garrity, introduced us to Gil. Wow. And we said, Gil, we're the Shulmans. And he said, hello, Shulmans. And we had a short conversation and we said, would you be willing to play on our record some accordion? And he said, I'd be delighted to play on your record. Yeah. So
he's really great.
He's such a wonderful, humble guy. And obviously 6-time Grammy winner and arranger, composer, you know, works all over the world. But he was really, really kind. And I thought that the solo that he took was just magnificent and really sort of takes you away. And it's because it is the title track and the last tune on the record. We sort of wanted to leave you with that feeling of, yes, there's all this craziness out there, but at the end of the day, love still conquers
yeah,
all. Absolutely. And when he sent us the tracks back after the final mix, we said, what do you think? And he said, I think you should call the album Crazy World.
Yeah, because we had been thinking that we were going to call it From This Moment On,
right.
Because it was such a call to action and how we were building it. And we sent, you know, Gil the master or the mix.
Yeah.
And he emailed us back. He's like, wow, this is amazing. And he goes, and of course, over time, you know, things have been getting crazier and crazier. He goes, I really think you should consider calling the album Crazy World. And we just looked at each other and went, Duh,
right?
Like, why don't we do that?
And then, the choice of Corcoran Holt, frankly, you know, Corcoran is Kenny Garrett's, you know, he's been with Kenny Garrett for several years. Yeah. And we've known him from D.C. I'm a Howard University grad, and I've known Corcoran and a lot of the sort of the D.C. jazz posse that I went to school with. Our producer, James McKinney, notwithstanding, I went to music school with him. So we had known him. Corcoran had played with us in New York at Richard Bona's
at
club.
Bonafide,
at Club Bonafide. So we had gigged with Corcoran before, and then we saw him at Newport with Kenny Garrett, and he was just like, we were like, if we could get Corcoran and Tane Watts together in a rhythm section, that would really push us. And as your hometown guy Pat Metheny always says, hire better musicians than you are on the bandstand, and they will push you. And in this case, that's exactly what they did.
Yeah. I love that you rearrange the lyrics and you acknowledge this reality we're in, because I've been asking musicians about America in 2026 between war and immigration and all these things that have turned into an absolute clown show.
Redistricting, all of
All of
these.
that. But I think that artists historically, from Baez to Dylan and all of those people that have come in to help us feel like we're connected, do you feel like that as a musician, as musicians, that you're doing that and helping people have some level of respite from all the headlines?
Yes, and when we do, we just did the whole record live a couple weeks ago. People really felt it. We didn't have Kokai with us, but we're bringing in
Other
other
freestylers.
freestylers and spoken word people, and we're about to launch a whole effort in social media around that because we want people to express not only how they're feeling, but feel compelled that they can do something about it. And music has always been important in that regard. In fact, I think it was Cathy Cartwright who did her Caminos do Jazz show, and she started with our track From This Very Moment On. And she built a whole show on protest tracks and how music has been used
Life imitates
to
art,
help people.
imitates life. And look, we did want there to be very beautiful moments on this record that are very transcendent and very beautiful. And there are, but there's also a lot of tension in this record. Stacey's line about only truth can fight fear, right? If you look at the her re-lyrics of From This Moment On, I think, you know, the idea of taking a Cole Porter love song and turning it into a rallying cry for hey, like we got to wake up to the fact that we need more truth and we need more love, not more divisiveness and more hate. And that's what the job of art is, to reflect life, but also to rally people to, as you said, you know, you mentioned Dylan and Baez, and you know, I could throw Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young in there, and I'm from Ohio, so that's where I go. So, you know, that Four Dead in Ohio, I mean, that's what music is supposed to do, right?
Certainly is. So speaking of love, let's get to the beginnings of your love story. How did you meet, and did was it music always in the beginning, or did that come later? Kind of give me an overview of how this happened.
We met in the advertising world, actually. We both had some day jobs that we were doing and connected. As people do, and we were out on a date. We didn't even know that we were both musicians. And I always tell that joke, like he said to me, "I'm a guitar player," and I'm like, "Oh boy, another guitar player." And but he really was a great guitar player, and I'm sure he thought in his mind, "Oh great, another singer." So, we didn't come together with in music,
No,
but we stay together through
I
music.
worked on the, you know, as all musicians do, we oftentimes can't make a living playing our music, so we have other side hustles. In my case, I was on the production side of TV commercials and radio commercials. Stacey was on the media side of that. We happened to meet each other through that, and determined that, what was the tune, the first tune that we just sort of,
Summertime.
yeah, so we,
Summertime.
you know, just, you know, it's one of those tunes that, you know, if you're a singer, if you're a guitar player, you know that every singer knows Summertime. And if you're a singer, you know, that's not, you know, that's one that you're pretty sure that, you know, I was pretty sure that she knew it. So we actually did sort of a samba arrangement of it on our first record, that we recorded in Italy, actually, right? And we tried it out and we were like, wow, that was pretty musical. Now, the first thing you do is you determine, when you meet, is like, are we making music or is this just a novelty thing, right? And so that was something that few couples, I think, have that dimension in their relationship to be able to not only make children together, but actually make music together. And you know, like anything else, you deal with all the things that normal couples deal with, bills and mortgages and, you know, every other thing that you do. But
Chores.
when it comes down to making music, you're serving the music, right? So that's why we sort of put ourselves aside and We sort of said, is this musical? Could this be musical? So if you listen to our first record that we recorded just as a duo, which is very much in the vein of like a Tuck and Patty kind of a record, it's from A Love Like Ours, which we recorded in Italy, in Rome.
Yep.
And it is just guitar and voice, and we thought, this is musical, let's do this.
It's actually a lot of the tracks on that. It's funny because when you come together as a couple, as Al was saying, you navigate life, and life is complicated, and there's, you know, a million things on the to-do list. But what would happen for us is that once the children came, we had to put them to bed, and we did that together, and he would play and I would sing. And incredibly, a lot of the repertoire on that first album came out of what should we play next so he'll fall asleep, you know.
Yep.
And we found all these tunes that we wanted to do, and
We did Estate, right?
We did all these wonderful tunes. We wrote lullabies for the kids. That's not on the record, but that was a part of us actually getting into a rhythm of being musical together and making that part of our daily life before, you know, we recorded anything. So it's kind of a special way of saying that of how we kind of came together as a musical.
Stacey was a bebop singer on lots of commercial sessions in New York. She knew all the background singers that worked, you know, steady jingle sessions and steady commercials. And I had come from Chicago. And so I was, I had, you know, some really great experiences playing for 15 years in Chicago. I studied under Cal Collins in Cincinnati when I grew up, and then when I moved to Chicago under David Bloom, and then from there when I came to New York under Jack Wilkins. So I had had some great teachers along the way, but gigs, as I mentioned earlier, the caliber of players just kept getting better as I went from Cincinnati to Chicago and then to New York, with a stopover at Howard in between, where I had the good fortune of working with amazing jazz faculty like Jerry Allen at Howard University before she passed, Grady Tate, who was of course Wes Montgomery's drummer, the great, you know, Keeter Betts, Ella Fitzgerald's bass player. So that was a very privileged experience that I was then able to bring that when I finally moved from DC to New York. So, so that's, you know, that's sort of how it came together.
Yeah.
And we've been, you know, making music ever since. And this is one where we just felt like, boy, this can't just be about tunes that we want to do. We have to reflect what the times are like here. So that's why we went. That's why we went with this sort of repertoire. And I would say, you know, there's some interesting comments on AI. There's comments on the environment. Stacey, why don't you talk about, did you have a chance to listen to
the
the AI tracks that we put on there and why we did that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's interesting because there's such a fear of AI and what it's going to do. But I think if we grab it like a fish out of the river and inspect it and play around and
You're so right.
So right. And then let 100%. It go.
You're so right.
It's, and look, you don't have to be a musician to be afraid of AI. Like pretty much every sector of life is wondering how this is going to work. And AI is affecting the environment too, right? Mm-hmm. So everything is interconnected. But from a practitioner's perspective, and certainly from a vocalist perspective, you know, I started to experiment with it because I had all these ideas, these lyrics and melodies in my head that I wanted to create as kind of an intro piece into Double Rainbow. And Double Rainbow exists on the album because it's commentary on the importance of the environment. And, you know, when you just listen to those lyrics, right? Listen, the rain is falling on the roses. You can't listen. You can't hear the rain falling on the roses if there's so much noise around you that it's completely drowned out. And that goes back to the pandemic too, right? Didn't we all walk out in our backyards and suddenly heard the birds and heard things that we didn't hear before because they'd been drowned out by all kinds of environmental noise? That's why Double Rainbow was there, and it was important for us to put something before that helped us frame why that was important. So I had all these counter melodies and stacked vocal ideas and lyrics that, you know, really represented what we were living through. AI being one of them, political upheaval being another of them. So I thought, well, let me try to do this with AI, because isn't that kind of ironic? And I used this platform called Suno that had gotten some, a lot of musicians were working with it. But I didn't want it to create the thing for me. I wanted it to create what I wanted, which is, I would say, a significant challenge, because we all know how to prompt now in some way, shape, or form. But what I wanted to do was give it my lyrics, give it my melodies, tell it which instruments I wanted it to. You know, I would sing a line and I'm like, okay, that's, you know, a cello. Or I'd sing this line and, you know, that's a saxophone or whatever. So it was a very arduous process because it doesn't like that. It wants to create its own stuff. But I literally used it as, you know, kind of like a baking machine, you know, like I'm going to give you this ingredient and I want you to turn it into that. And that's kind of how
literally, she was singing melody lines into her cell phone in Puerto Rico. We were on vacation.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm singing these lines that I want to stack. And I'm like, okay. And I have not, you know, I was not in the Suno. I haven't played with AI music at all, except listening to a lot of the sort of tracks that have been created with it, and with a lot of disdain, as many musicians do. And then Stacy came up with this, with the prelude, which is purposely spelled P-R-A-I-L-U-D-E, because we wanted everybody to know that this is an AI track. There are no humans on it on purpose. It is a commentary on AI. And it is hopefully followed by, it is sort of set up as the children's game and prelude, the sort of this triptych, as
I call people. It a triptych,
right?
Yeah, like the visual metaphor is a triptych, right? But it's really meant to be three pieces. It's, wow, this is, you know, the it's children's games, it's articulated with AI, it's beautiful. We used, you know, different tracks, you know, to that we used as references. River of Orchids,
XTC, River XTC of Orchids,
was sort of an influence in how
I
built those, you know, the way that that worked. But then we wanted to move into, like, this is beautiful, what is this? And then hit them with Prelude, which is, okay, but there's like a weird side to this, like, and there's all this crazy stuff going on, so we need to pay attention to it. And that's where you get that, here we come, to take your jobs, to take your art, to break your heart. You know, that's what that's about. Because like anything, we're very eager to explore and accept and take on what technology will do for us in our lives. And it can be very powerful. But so many people don't understand how much of their privacy is gone. So many people don't understand how much of their lives are out there, or how dependent they've become, or how their skills have been changed or manipulated because of technology, and what the cost is in terms of just, you know, we talk about with our kids and with mobile phone technology, and are people having conversations anymore? Someone wrote a book, I think it was Sherry Turkle, who wrote this book. She's an MIT professor, and it was called Something Alone, Going Alone, Living Alone, something like that. And it was basically, she was a celebrationist about technology, and that's why she was at MIT. But then she wrote this book, and it was really about how technology was changing us. And in particular, she interviewed teenagers and said, what's the one skill you want to have before you go to college? This was in 2012. And the student said, I want to learn how to have a conversation. And I thought, oh my God, really? You need to learn how to have a conversation? And then a year later, I went to an advertising conference, all young people, and there was an entire session built on how to turn to your neighbor who you don't know and start a conversation. And I thought,
wow,
oh my God, this is real. This is real. So that's where a lot of the impetus of those lyrics and those melodies, because we want people to hear those voices that sound so real and so rich, but also just a little too perfect, yeah. Right? Like everything's just a little too perfect.
And the definition of what we would say AI should be is authenticity and imperfection. Mm-hmm. Not synthetic perfection, but authenticity and imperfection, which by the time you get to Double Rainbow and you hear us kick in, you can tell it's real humans. Yeah. And that's what we wanted. That's the point we were trying to make, Joe, was to sort of say, and now for the humans.
And now for something real.
And now for the real people.
And now for people.
And now for we the people. That's right.
Yeah.
So hopefully I know that's kind of an intellectual explanation of what those three tracks are about, but that's why we very intentionally wanted to say we are using AI here and we're making a social commentary on it.
Yeah.
Even the entrance to Double Rainbow that has the sort of Age of Aquarius riff that I'm singing is intentional because it's a reckoning, right? It's a, hey, time to wake up.
Yeah, for sure. That, well said. We traverse so much ground here. So Crazy World's the new album. It'll be out streaming. If people want to get a copy or catch you live, how do they do that?
Best, easiest is to go to asisjazz.com. They can go to the tour list. They can, you know, go to the links to buy the record.
To go on a 10-city tour. We start in Philadelphia. We're in Montclair Saturday.
Tomorrow,
we're in Montclair. We go from Montclair to Philadelphia, then from Philly to Blues Alley in D.C. We go from there to... Asheville, Chicago... Cincinnati. We're about to do 10 cities and very excited to be taking this record out. And as is jazz.com, well, of course, we're on Spotify, we're Apple Music, Amazon, we're in all those places. But again, hopefully you enjoyed the record.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Yeah, I can't wait to profile it on the show. So great to meet you. Best
likewise.
So
really appreciate you having us on. And authenticity and imperfection.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds and singers in New Jersey, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to both Al and Stacy for swinging on by the show. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube, and for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.